Hello everyone, my name is Elijah David, minister of the 12th Hour Apostolic Sabbatarian Congregation by the 12th Hour in Elgin, Texas. Today is January 27th, 2023. It is the 16th day of Shavuot, 2027. We will start our first service on this Sabbath day with a song, and then we'll go into prayer thought, and then we'll go into our sermon. Our sermon is going to be listed from entitled to the Temptation and Fall in the Garden of Eden. We're going to learn about how Yahweh will not tolerate a lie. Now, seemingly, we have a lot of that mentioned in the Bible. And David had a lot of enemies. He had many, many enemies that hated him and that lied on him. And you see what David has to say about it in our prayer thought. We're going to read a few verses from a prayer thought. In Job 8:22, it says, "They that hate thee shall be clothed with shame, and the dwelling place of the wicked shall come to naught." Psalms 9:13. "Have mercy upon me, O Yahweh. Consider my trouble which I suffer of them that hate me. Thou that liftest me up from the gates of death." Psalms 18:40. "Thou hast also given me the necks of my enemies, that I might destroy them that hate me." Psalms 21:8. "Thine hand shall find out all thine enemies. Thy right hand shall find out those that hate thee." Psalms 25:19. "Consider mine enemies, for they are many, and they hate me with a cruel hatred." Psalms 34:21. "Evil shall slay the wicked, and they that hate the righteous shall be desolate." Psalms 35:19. "Let not them that are mine enemies wrongfully rejoice over me, neither let them wink with the eye that hate me without a cause." Psalms 38:19. "But mine enemies are lively, and they are strong, and they that hate me wrongfully are multiplied." Psalms 41:7. "All that hate me whisper together against me. Against me do they divide my hurt." Well, that's enough for our prayer thought. We're going to go now into the book of Patriarchs and Prophets, Ellen G. White. This is in chapter 3. And it's entitled "The Temptation and Fall." Okay, it says, "No longer free to stir up the rebellion in heaven, Satan's enmity against Yahweh found a new field and the plotting of the ruin of the human race, and the happiness and peace of the holy pair in Eden. He beheld a vision of the bliss that unto him was forever lost. Moved by envy, he determined to incite them to disobedience, and bring upon them the guilt and penalty of sin. He would change their love to distress, and their songs of praise and he reproaches against their Maker. Thus, he would not only cleanse these innocent beings into the same misery which he was himself enduring, but would cast dishonor upon Yahweh and cause grief in heaven. Our first parents were not left without a warning of the danger that threatened them. Heavenly messengers opened unto them the history of Satan's fall and his plots for their destruction, unfolding more fully the nature of the divine government which the prince of the evil was trying to overthrow. It was by the disobedience to the just commands of Yahweh that Satan and his host's oath has fallen. How important then that Adam and Eve should honor that law by which alone it is possible for order and equity to be maintained. For the law of Yahweh is as sacred as himself. It is a revelation of his will, a transcript of his character. For the expression of the divine love and wisdom, for the harmony of the creation depends upon the perfect conformity of all beings, of everything animate and inanimate, for the law of the Creator. For the Yahweh has ordained laws for the government not only of the living beings, but of all the operations of nature. Everything is under fixed laws which cannot be disregarded. But while everything in the nature is governed by the natural laws, man alone of all that inhabits the earth is amendable unto the moral law to man with the crowning work of the creation. For the Yahweh has given power unto for the understanding of his requirements, for the comprehending of the justice, and for the beneficence of his law, and his sacred claims upon him, and of the man unswerving obedience is required. Like the angel, with the dwellers in Eden, had been placed upon the probation, their happy estate could be retained only on the condition of the fidelity unto the Creator's law. They could obey and live, or disobey and perish. For Yahweh had made them the recipients of the rich blessing. But should they disregard his will, he who spared not the angels had sinned. Could not spare them, transgression would forfeit his gifts and bring upon them misery and ruin. For the angels warned them to be on their guard against the devices of Satan, for his efforts to ensnare them would be unwearied, while they were obedient unto Yahweh, for the evil one could not harm them, for if need be, every angel in heaven would be sent for their help. If they steadfastly rebel or repelled his first insinuation, they would be as secure as the heavenly messengers, but should they once yield under temptation, their nature would become so depraved that in themselves they would have no power and no disposition for the resisting Satan. He says, for the tree of the knowledge had been made as a test for their obedience and their love unto the Yahweh. For the Yahweh has seen fit to lay upon them but one prohibition as to the use of all that was in the garden, that if they should disregard his will in this particular, they would incur the guilt of the transgression. Satan was not to follow them with the continual temptation. He could have access unto them only at the forbidden tree. Should they attempt to investigate the nature, they would be exposed unto his wiles. They were admonished to give careful heed unto the warning which Yahweh has sent them, and to be content with the instruction which he has seen fit to impart. In order for the accomplishing of his work, unperceived, Satan chose for the employing as his medium the serpent, with a disguise well adapted for his purpose of the deception. For the serpent was then one of the, though the serpent was then one of the wisest and most beautiful creatures on the earth, it had the wings, and while flying through the air, presented an appearance of the dazzling brightness, having the color and brilliancy of the burnished gold, resting in the rich laden branches of the forbidden tree, and regaling itself with the delicious fruit. It was an object for the arresting of the attention and for the delighting of the eye of the beholder. Thus in the garden of the peace lurked the destroyer, watching for his prey. For the angels had cautioned Eve to beware of separating herself from her husband while occupied in their daily labor in the garden. With him she would be in a less danger from the temptation than if she were alone. But absorbed in her pleasing task, she unconsciously wandered from his side. On the perceiving that she was alone, she felt an apprehension of danger, but dismissed her fears, deciding that she had sufficient wisdom and strength to discern evil and to withstand it. unmindful of the angel's caution, she soon found herself gazing with a mingled curiosity and admiration upon the forbidden tree. The fruit was very beautiful, and she questioned with herself why Yahweh had withheld it from them. Now was the tempter's opportunity. As if he were able to discern the workings of her mind, he addressed her. Yea, hath God said, has Yahweh said, ye shall not eat of every tree of the garden? He was surprised and startled as she thus seemed to hear the echo of her thought. But the serpent continued in a musical voice, with a subtle praise of her surpassing loveliness, and his words were not displeasing. Instead of fleeing from the spot, she lingered wonderingly to hear a serpent speak. Had she been addressed by a being like the angel, her fears would have been excited. But she had no thought that the fascinating serpent could become the medium of the fallen foe. For the tempter's ensnaring question, she replies, "We may not eat, or we may eat of the fruit of the trees of the garden, but of the fruit of the tree which is in the midst of the garden, Yahweh has said, ye shall not eat of it, neither shall you touch it, lest you die. And the serpent said unto the woman, ye shall not surely die, for Yahweh doth know that in the day that you eat thereof, then your eyes shall be opened, and you shall be as Yahweh's, knowing good and evil. By partaking of this tree, he declared they would attain unto a more exalted sphere of the existence and enter a broader field of the knowledge. He himself had eaten of the forbidden fruit. Okay. This says, yes, Satan, I didn't know that he himself had eaten of the forbidden fruit. And as a result, had acquired the power of speech, and he insinuated that the Yahweh's jealousy desired to withhold this from them. Let's say should be exalted unto equality with himself. It was because of his wonderful properties imparting wisdom and power that he had prohibited them from tasting or even touching it. For the tempter intimated that the divine warning was not to be actually fulfilled. It was designed merely to intimidate them. How could it be possible for them to die? Had they not eaten of the tree of life? Yahweh had been seeking to prevent them from reaching a nobler development and finding greater happiness. Such has been Satan's work from the day of the Adam unto the present, and he has pursued it with a great success. For he tempts men to distrust Yahweh's love and in doubt of his wisdom. He is constantly seeking to excite a spirit of the irrelevant, irreverent curiosity, a restless, inquisitive desire for the penetrating of the secrets of the divine wisdom and power, and their efforts to search out what Yahweh has been pleased to withhold multitudes, overlook the truth which he has revealed, and which are essential unto salvation. For Satan tempts men to disobedience by leading them to believe they are entering into a wonderful field of the knowledge. But this is all a deception, elated with the ideas of the progression they are by the trampling on the Yahweh's requirements, setting their feet in the path that leads to degradation and death. Satan represented unto the holy pair that they would be gainers by breaking the law of Yahweh. Do we not today hear similar reasoning? Many talk of the narrowness of those who obey Yahweh's commandments, while they themselves claim to have the broader ideas and to enjoy greater liberty. What is it but an echo of the voice from Eden? And the day you eat thereof, transgress the divine requirement, you shall be as gods, be as Yahweh. Satan claimed to have received great good by the eating of the forbidden fruit, but he did not let it appear that by the transgression he had become an outcast from heaven, though he had found sin to result in the infinite loss. He concealed his own misery in the order for the drawing others into the same position. So now the transgressor seeks for the disguising of his true character. He may claim to be holy, but his exalted profession only makes him the more dangerous as a deceiver. He is on the side of Satan, trampling upon the law of Yahweh and leading others to do the same unto their eternal ruin. Eve really believed the words of the Satan, but her belief did not save her from the penalty of sin. She disbelieved the words of Yahweh, and this was what led to her fall. And the judgment men will not be condemned because they conscientiously believe a lie. that because they did not believe the truth, because they neglected the opportunity of learning what is the truth. Notwithstanding the sophistry of the Satan, and to the contrary, it is always disastrous to disobey the Yahweh. He must set our hearts to know what is the truth. All the lessons which Yahweh has caused to be placed on the record in His Word are for our warning and instruction. They are given for the saving us from the deception, for the neglect will result in the ruin unto ourselves. Whatever contradicts Yahweh's word, we may be sure proceeds from the Satan. For the serpent plucked the fruit of the forbidden tree and placed it in the hands of the half-reluctant Eve. Well, I don't know if that's in the Bible or not, where it says the serpent plucked the fruit. Okay, it says, in Genesis 3:6, and when the woman saw that the tree was good for food, and that it was pleasant to the eyes, and a tree to be desired to make one wise, she took of the fruit thereof and did eat, and gave also unto her husband with her, and he did eat. Now Ellen G. White makes the statement that on page 55, bottom of the page, Patriarchs and Prophets, she says, a serpent plucked the fruit of the forbidden tree and placed it in the hands of the half-reluctant Eve. The Bible don't talk anything like that language. Now, I love Sister White, and I know she's Yahweh's messenger, and she did a masterful work for 70 years, and she did Yahweh's bidding. Really, she said, though, even though my writings have been taken as the truth, you must take them to the law and the testimony. If they cannot stand this test, there's no light in them. So this is one thing that we've taken to the law and the testimony. Is this serpent didn't tell her to, he didn't pluck the fruit himself. And I haven't found anyone about where it says the serpent ate of that fruit. But Sister White said he did. But I haven't found a Bible where he said he ate of the fruit. He was only there to tempt Eve if she should come near the tree. And he may have eat of it. I'm not going to say he did or he didn't, but I don't remember reading it in the Bible. Okay, let's continue our reading. It says that, okay, it says, for the serpent plucked the fruit of the forbidden tree and placed it in the hands of the half-reluctant Eve. Well, the Bible says that Eve did it all herself. She just reasoned, or she took of it. Then he reminded her of her own words, that Yahweh had forbidden them to touch it, lest they die. She would receive no more harm from eating the fruit, he declared, than from touching it, receiving no evil result from what she had done. Eve grew bolder, when she saw that the tree was good for food and that it was pleasant to the eyes and a tree to be desired to make one wise, she took of the fruit thereof and did eat. It was grateful unto the taste. And as she ate, she seemed to feel a vivifying power and imagine herself entering upon a higher state of the existence. Without a fear, she plucked and ate. Now there it is right there. It says, without a fear, she plucked and ate. Didn't say Lucifer plucked it for her. And now having herself transgressed, she became the agent of Satan and working the ruin of her husband. In a state of the strange, unnatural excitement, with her hands filled with the forbidden fruit, she sought his presence and related all that had occurred. An expression of the sadness came over the face of Adam. He appeared astonished and alarmed, for the words of the Eve, in response unto the words of the Eve, he replied that this must be the foe against whom they had been warned, and by the divine sentence she must die. In the answer, she urged him to eat, repeating the words of the serpent that they should not surely die. She reasoned that this must be true, for she felt no evidence of the Yahweh's displeasure, but on the contrary, realized exhilarating influence. Let's do that again. For she felt no evidence of the Yahweh's displeasure. Only, on the contrary, did she realize that it had a delicious, exhilarating influence by the thrilling every faculty of her body with the new alive. Such she imagined as inspired the heavenly messengers, for the Adam understood that his companion had transgressed the command of Yahweh, disregarded the only prohibition laid upon them as a test of their fidelity and love. There was a terrible struggle in his mind. He mourned that he had permitted Eve to wander from his side. But now the deed was done, he must be separated from her, whose society had been his joy. How could he have it thus? Adam had enjoyed the companionship of Yahweh and of the holy angel. He had looked upon the glory of the Creator. He understood the high destiny open unto the human race, if they remain faithful unto Yahweh. Yet all these blessings were lost. And the fear of losing that one gift which in his own eyes outvalued every other. Love, gratitude, loyalty to the Creator, all were overcome by the love for Eve. She was a part of himself, and he could not endure the thought of the separation. He did not realize that the same infinite power who had formed the dust of the earth created him as a living beautiful form and had in the love given him a companion should supply her place. He resolved to share her fate. If she must die, he would die with her. After all, he reasoned, might not the words of Yahweh, the words of the wise serpent be true? Eve was before him as beautiful and apparently as innocent as before this act of the disobedience. She expressed greater love for him than before. No sign of the death appeared in her, and he decided to brave the consequences. He seized the fruit and quietly ate. After his transgression, Adam at first imagined himself entering upon a higher state of the existence. But soon the thought of his sin filled him with a terror, for the air which had hitherto been of a mild and uniform temperature seemed to chill the guilty pair. For the love and peace which had been theirs was gone, and in its place he felt a sense of the sin, a dread of the future, a nakedness of the soul. The robe of the light which had enshrouded them now disappeared, and to supply its place, they endeavored to fashion for themselves the covering where they could not, while unclothed, meet the eye of the Yahweh and holy angels. They now began to see the true character of their sin. For the Adam reproached his companion for her folly in leaving his side and permitting herself to be deceived by the serpent. But they both flattered themselves that he who had given them so many evidences of his love would pardon this one transgression, or that they would not be subjected to so dire a punishment as they had feared. Brother Satan exulted in his success. He had tempted the woman to distrust the Yahweh's love, for the doubting of his wisdom, and for the transgression of his law. And through her he had caused the overthrow of the Adam. But the great lawgiver was about to make known unto the Adam and Eve the consequences of their transgression. For the divine presence was manifested in the garden, and their innocence and holiness, they had joyfully welcomed the approach of their Creator, but now they fled in the terror and sought for the hiding in the deepest recesses of the garden. But the Yahweh called unto Adam and said unto him, "Where art thou?" And he said, "I heard thy voice in the garden, and I was afraid, because I was naked, and I hid myself." And he said, "Who told thee that thou wast naked? Hast thou eaten of the tree whereof I commanded thee that thou shouldest not eat?" Adam could neither deny nor excuse his sin. But instead of manifesting penitence, he endeavored to for the casting of the blame upon his word, and thus upon the Yahweh himself. For the woman whom thou gavest me to be with me, she gave me of the tree, and I did eat. He who from love to eat had deliberately chosen to forfeit the approval of Yahweh, his home and the paradise, and the eternal life of the joy, could now, after his fall, endeavor to make his companion, and even the Creator himself, responsible for the transgression? So terrible is the power of sin. When the woman was asked, "What is this that thou hast done?" she answered, "For the serpent beguiled me, and I did eat." Why didst thou create the serpent? Why didst thou suffer him to enter Eden? For these were the questions implied in her excuse for her sin. Like the Adam, she charged the Yahweh with the responsibility of their fall. For the spirit of the self-justification originated and the father of the lies. There it is out there. Satan's the father of lies. And it's been going on all down for 6,000 years. And Yahweh's true temple, for it was indulged by our first parents as soon as they yielded unto the influence of the Satan, and has been exhibited by all the sons and daughters of the Adam, instead of the humbly confessing their sins, they try to shield themselves by the casting the blame upon others, upon the circumstances, or upon Yahweh, making even his blessings an occasion of nurturing or murmuring against him. For the Yahweh then passed sentence upon the serpent, "Because thou hast done this, thou art cursed above all cattle and above every beast of the field. Upon thy belly shalt thou go, and thus shalt thou eat all the days of thy life." Since it had been employed as a Satan's medium, the serpent is to share the visitation of the divine judgment. From the most beautiful and admired of the creatures of the field, it was to become the most groveling and detested of them all, feared and hated by both man and beast. For the words next addressed unto the serpent applied directly unto Satan himself, pointing forward unto his ultimate defeat and destruction. "I will put enmity between thee and the woman, and between thy seed and her seed, and it shall bruise thy head, and thou shalt bruise his heel." He was told of the sorrow and pain that must be henceforth be her portion. And he always said, "Thy desire shall be unto thy husband, and he shall rule over thee." In the creation, Yahweh had made her the equal of Adam. Had they remained obedient unto Yahweh in the harmony with his great law of love, they would ever have been in the harmony with each other. But sin had brought discord, and now their union could be maintained in harmony, preserved only by the submission on the part of the one or the other. Eve had been the first in the transgression, and she had fallen into the temptation by the separating from her companion, contrary unto the divine direction. It was by her solicitation that Adam sinned, and she was now placed in the subjection unto her husband. But the principles enjoined in the law of had the principles enjoined in the law of the Yahweh been cherished by the fallen race, this sentence, though growing out of the result of sin, would have proved a blessing unto them. But man's abuse of the supremacy that thus given him has too often rendered the law of the woman very bitter, and made her life a burden. Eve had been perfectly happy by her husband's side in her Eden home. But like the restless modern Eve, she was flattered with the hope of entering a higher sphere than that which Yahweh had assigned her, and the attempting to rise above her original position, she fell far below it. She fell far below it. A similar result will be reached by all who are unwilling for the taking up cheerfully their life duties in accordance with Yahweh's plan. In their efforts to reach the position for which He has not fitted them, many are leaving vacant the place where they might be a blessing. Okay. In their desire for a higher sphere, many have sacrificed true womanly dignity and nobility of the character, and have left undone the very work that heaven appointed them. Unto Adam, the Yahweh declared, "Because thou hast hearkened unto the voice of thy wife, and hast eaten of the tree of which I commanded thee, saying, Thou shalt not eat of it, cursed is the ground for thy sake, and sorrow shalt thou eat of it all the days of thy life. Thorns also and thistles shall it bring forth unto thee, and thou shalt eat the herb of the field, and the sweat of thy face shalt thou eat bread till thou return unto the ground, for out of it wast thou taken, for dust thou art, and unto dust shalt thou return." It was not the will of Yahweh that the sinless pair should know all of evil. He had freely given them the good and had withheld the evil. But contrary unto his command, they had eaten of the forbidden tree, and now they would continue to eat of it. They would have the knowledge of the evil all the days of their life. From that time, the race would be afflicted by the Satan's temptation instead of the happy labor hitherto appointed them. Anxiety and toil were to be their lot, for they would be a subject of fire unto disappointment, grief, and pain, and finally to death. Under the curse of the sin, all our nature is to witness to man of the character and results of the rebellion against Yahweh. When the Yahweh made man, he made him ruler over the earth and all the living creatures. So long as Adam remained loyal unto heaven, all nature was in subjection unto him. But when he rebelled against the divine law, the interior creatures, inferior creatures were in the rebellion against his rule. Thus, Yahweh in his great mercy would show man the sacredness of his law and lead them by their own experience for the sin of the danger of the setting it aside even in the slightest degree. And the life of the toil and care, which was henceforth to be the man's lot, was appointed. In love, it was a discipline rendered needful by his sin, for the placing of a check upon the indulgence of the appetite and passion, for the developing the habits of the self-control. It was a part of the Yahweh's great plan for the man's recovery from the ruin and degradation of sin. For the warning given unto our first parent in the day that thou eatest thereof, thou shalt surely die, did not imply that they were to die on the very day when they partook of the forbidden fruit, but on that day the irrevocable sentence would be pronounced. Immortality was promised them on the condition of obedience. By the transgression, they would forfeit eternal life. That very day, they would be doomed to death. In order for the possessing of an endless existence, man must continue to partake of the tree of life. Deprived of this, his vitality would gradually diminish until life should become extinct. Let's read that again. In the order for the possession of an endless existence, man must continue to partake of the tree of life. Okay. Deprived of this, his vitality would gradually diminish until life should become extinct. It was Satan's plan that Adam and Eve should by the disobedience incur Yahweh's displeasure, and then, if they fail to obtain forgiveness, he hoped that they would eat of the tree of life and thus perpetuate an existence of sin and misery. But after man's fall, holy angels were immediately commissioned for the guardian of the tree of the life. Around those angels flashed beams of the light having the appearance of a glittering sword. None of the family of the Adam were permitted to pass that barrier for the protecting of the life-giving fruit. Hence, there is not an immortal sinner. For the tide of the woe that flowed from the transgression of our first parents is regarded by the many as too awful of a consequence for so small a sin, and they impeach the wisdom and justice of the Yahweh and his dealings with the man. But if they would look more deeply into this question, they might discern their error. For the Yahweh created man after his own likeness, free from sin, for the earth was to be peopled with beings only of a lower than the angels. But their obedience must be tested, for the Yahweh would not permit the world to be filled with those who would disregard his law. Yet in his great mercy, he appointed Adam no severe test, and the very likeness of the prohibition made the sin exceedingly great. If Adam could not bear the smallest of the test, he could not have endured a greater trial. Okay, had he been entrusted with the higher responsibility, had some great test been appointed Adam, then those whose hearts inclined to evil would have excused themselves by the sin. This is a trivial matter, and Yahweh is not so particular about the little things, and there would be the continual transgression in the things looked upon as the small, and which pass unrebuked among men. But the Yahweh has made it evident that sin is, in any degree, is offensive unto him. Unto Eve is seen to a small thing to disobey Yahweh by the tasting of the fruit of the forbidden tree, and for the tempting of her husband also into the transgression. But their sin opened up the floodgates of the woe of upon the world. Who can know in the moment of the temptation that the terrible consequences that will result from one wrong step? Many who teach that the law of Yahweh is not binding upon the man urge that it is impossible for him to obey its precept. But if this were true, then why did Adam suffer the penalty of the transgression? For the sin of our first parents brought guilt and sorrow upon the world. And had it not been for the goodness and mercy of the Yahweh, would have plunged the race into the hopeless despair. Let none deceive themselves, for the wages of the sin is death, for the law of the Yahweh can no more be transgressed with the impunity now than when the sentence was pronounced upon the father of the mankind. After sin, Adam and Eve were no longer to dwell in Eden. They earnestly entreated that they might remain in the home of their innocence and joy, for they confessed that they had forfeited all right unto that happy abode, but placed themselves for the future for the yielding strict obedience unto Yahweh, but they were told that their nature had become depraved by sin, for they had lessen their strength to resist evil, and had opened the way for the Satan to gain more ready access unto them. In their innocence, they had yielded unto the temptation, and now in a state of a conscious guilt, they would have less power for the maintaining of their integrity. In the humility and unutterable sadness, they bade farewell unto their beautiful home and went forth for the dwelling upon the earth, for the rest of the curse of sin, for the atmosphere was so mild and uniform, and the temperature was now subject unto the marked changes, and the Yahweh mercifully provided them with the garment of the skins as a protection, as a skin from their sheep, their animal sacrifice, as a protection from the extremes of the heat and cold. As a witness and a drooping flower and fallen leaf, the first signs of the decay, Adam and his companion mourn more and deeply than men now mourn over their dead. For the death of the frail, delicate flowers was indeed a cause of the sorrow. But when the goodly trees cast off their leaves, the scene brought vividly unto mind the stern fact that death is the portion of every living thing. For the Garden of Eden remained upon the earth long after man had become an outcast from his pleasant path. The fallen race were long permitted to gaze upon the home of the innocent, their entrance barred only by the watching angel. At the cherubim gate of the paradise, the divine glory was revealed. Hither came Adam and his sons to worship Yahweh. Here they renewed their vows of the obedience unto that law, that's the ceremonial law of the sanctuary. Now, Leviticus 23:1-44, the transgression of which had banished them from Eden. When the tide of the iniquity overspread the world and the wickedness of the men determined their destruction by a flood of the water, by the hand that had planted Eden drew it from the earth, but in the final restitution, when there shall be a new heaven and a new earth, it is to be restored, more gloriously adorned than at the beginning. Then they that have kept Yahweh's commandments shall breathe in the immortal vigor beneath the tree of the life, and through the unending ages, the inhabitants of the sinless world shall behold in that garden of the delight a sample of the perfect work of the Yahweh's creation, untouched by the curse of sin, with a sample of what the whole earth would have become had man but fulfilled the Creator's glorious plan. For the glory of the Yahweh was revealed between the cherubim, afterwards called the Shekinah. It abode in the Holy of Holies, the center of Israel's worship. See Exodus 25:22, Psalm 80 verse 1, Isaiah 37:16, Genesis 4:16. This brings in verse step this hour. Contact us at the 11th hour. Call us. Number 11, click on our audio archive to hear this message. Well, we shall close now with a song. 104. Well, that's right. Hello, everyone. My name is Elijah David, minister of the 12th hour Apostolic Sabbath and Congregation of the 12th hour in Hill, Texas. Today is June 20, 2018, or it is the 7th day in the 4th month, 2021. We will start our first service today with a song entitled, What a Friend We Have in Yahshua. what a friendly heaven Yahshua, all your sins and griefs to bear. What a privilege to carry everything to Yah and pray. Oh, what peace we often forfeit. Oh, what needless pain we bear. Oh, because we do not carry everything to Yah and pray. Every trials and temptation is a trouble anywhere. We should never be discouraged. Take it to the Yah and pray. And we find a friend so faithful, who will all our sorrows share, passion as our every weakness, take it to the Yah and pray. Are we weak and heavy laden, with the load of care, precious Savior, still of refuge, take it to the Yah and pray. Do the Prince be stars forsake thee, take it to the Yah and pray. And his arms you take and shield me, thou wilt find a solace there.